You know, you might not like thinking about it, but there are thousands of tiny organisms living in your digestive tract alone. Microbes, we call them. They're abundant in our bodies, and as we learn more about them, it's becoming clear that they have a big impact on your health and on mine. Larry Mueller here. On the Ideas Network, our next guests are doing some interesting work with microbes. And Federico Rai is one of them, an assistant professor of bacteriology at the UW-Madison. Federico, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to be here.
And Katrina Forrest, a professor of bacteriology at the UW-Madison, our guest as well. Katrina, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's an interesting area for me. We'll talk about their research in microbiome and answer your questions about microbes and gut health. There's been a lot in the news and in the health journals about all kinds of things. Probiotics is something that comes to mind. I'm sure there may be some questions relating to that.
I'm sure.
I know they've looked at it. Federico's been involved, and probably Katrina as well, in fermentation kinds of things. So we'll talk about that with them. And certainly, if you have a question or a comment, I hope you'll join in. Again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Well, maybe first we get to define, we're talking about microbes here. How would you define a microbe, Federico?
So we define microbes as sort of entities that we cannot see with the bare eye, so that we need some special means to see them. and so like a microscope. And they belong to all domains of life. They can be related to us. They can be eukaryotes. They can be bacteria, which is sort of what we study a lot these days. And there's also another domain of life called archaea that contain a lot of sort of diverse microbes.
And I saw somewhere every surface of our body is pretty much colonized by some kind of microbe.
Yes, we every surface and every cavity and of our body is colonized with microbes.
Looking at my arms here and my, you know, your faces and apparently they're everywhere.
Yes, and the numbers of on our surfaces and our skin are not that large, but in our gut we have close to 100 trillion microbes.
100 trillion.
So they have about the same number of microbial cells and then Homo sapiens cells, so human cells in our body.
I'm wondering what possesses somebody to think about, well, this would be a good area for me to study. Well, how did you get interested in this, Federico?
Well, I am originally from Argentina, and I have a sort of pretty broad training in clinical microbiology and so clinical biochemistry, and I was exposed mostly to microbes from the perspective of pathogens. Mm-hmm. But when I was in grad school, I really I was exposed to other type of microbes that live in the environment, and microbes that do really important things like photosynthesis. Mm-hmm. Sort of microbes that are really important to different ecosystems. And from there, I started exploring different types of microbes, but I was always interested in human health as well. And in 2005, I saw a seminar who ended up being my postdoctoral advisor, Jeffrey Gordon, at the American Society of Microbiology, where he was talking about these early findings about these, you know, gut microbes that affected energy homeostasis in the host and sort of these mice studies and human studies. And that blew my mind, and so I wanted to so badly work on that.
Katrina, what about you?
Well, like Federico, I actually also started out thinking about pathogens and how to combat them, but what I really loved learning about in graduate school was that many of the mechanisms that pathogens use to interact with humans or with the environment were shared by non-pathogenic organisms. So to study mechanisms, it was what brought me into studying commensal organisms. For me, I also did a little tiny research project in graduate school on soil, beneficial soil microbes, and how they help plants fix nitrogen. So that was another part that drew me in. And actually having my own kids and thinking about breastfeeding and birthing were also events that really caused me to think about beneficial microbes. And then that all came to a beautiful, not conclusion, but maybe climax when I got here, and my colleague at the time, Heidi Goodrich Blair, and I wrote a proposal for the study of symbiotic interactions between microbes and host, and brought in several new faculty members to the UW. So I've been involved in that way ever since.
Ever since, yeah. Well, and as you're indicating here, most of these organisms, most of these microbes are the ones we have are good ones. Aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the most part, they are. Under most normal circumstances, they are not here to hurt us. They are here to live in harmony with us.
There are some bad ones.
Of course. But sort of they can be bad sort of if the environment gets disrupted. For the most part, they tend to behave and they tend to sort of harmonize with the host that contains them.
And so the relationship between them and human health is, there are things that can throw it off. Is that pretty much, Katrina?
Yeah, absolutely. So dysfunction of the system can change the balance of the beneficial or the pathogenic microbes, or even flip the switch for any individual microbial species to go from being beneficial or at least commensal to being pathogenic.
So where do they come from in the first place?
Well, we know that sort of the first colonizers, they tend to come from our mothers.
Okay.
Sort of, you know, through as we come out through the birth canal, we started to get colonized, and sort of then we as we are through breastfeeding. And then through the environment, through many sort of...
lots of different ways.
Yeah.
Well, we'll take some calls. By the way, you can join in 800-642-1234. Alex in Minocqua has a question or comment. Alex, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, after you take probiotics, how if the stomach acid in your stomach actually kills it, or if it can actually be resilient enough to get into your microbiome and stay. And also, is the type of bacteria that we find in microbes, what is the most research-based? What do we know about them?
Okay. So, Federico, you want to start?
Yeah, I can start with sort of the first question sort of relates to whether people take as probiotics, whether they survive sort of the acid of the stomach. And I would say that for the most part, that many of them do survive. I mean, assuming that you're taking a probiotic that is alive, a substantial amount of them will survive. But something that people should be aware is that most of the probiotics that we get from the shelf, and sort of most of the probiotics that are in the market actually, are not natural colonizers of the human intestine. So they are basically tourists. They just pass through the gut. They might exert beneficial effects, but in most cases, the benefits that they exert do not depend on them colonizing us.
Oh.
So what most likely situation is that while you are taking the probiotics, your gut contains sort of the bugs that you are taking. But as soon as you stop taking them, they're gone because they cannot stick there for the most part under normal circumstances.
Yeah. Katrina, you were going to add to that?
Oh, I was going to say the exact same thing. Federico got it. But I could try to address the second part of the question. If I understood it correctly, Alex, you wanted to know which microbes we've done the most research on?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I would say the workhorse microbe that has been beaten to death by microbiologists for hundreds of years is Escherichia coli, which we often shorten to E. coli. And it's probably the microbe that's had the most scientific experiments done on it. Would you agree, Federico?
Oh, by far.
And why?
Well, it's easily manipulatable. It grows on many different sources of carbon and nitrogen, and it's
it's
abundant everywhere.
Yeah.
It has a lot of mechanistic pathways that we are interested in other microbes too, but it's easier to study.
Yeah, and something that I think is sort of really like to add is from what Kathy says is that we know a lot about E. coli, and we typically think of E. coli as this sort of organism that resides in feces, sort of we associate it with feces, but it's actually a very minor component of the human gut. We know so much about it because we can culture it very easily. We can work with it very easily, as opposed to 99% of the microbes that live in our gut.
Yeah, that's it. Alex, thanks. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Madeline in the pier. Hi, Madeline.
Hello. Hello. I'd like to get more insight into a human, well, I don't know if it's just human or not, but a health condition called candida. It's my understanding that it can get, you know, something in the microbiome can get so out of control that it can really affect your health in so many ways, even to keep you from losing weight, for all kinds of things. Could you talk about that, please?
Yeah. Maybe first you could talk about why would the microbes in our bodies or the microbiome get out of sync to begin with? What would cause something like that to happen?
Well, over the decades, we have been really good at sort of minimizing infections, preventing bad organisms from causing disease. We have, and by doing that, we have we have come sort of to a situation where our immune system is not being properly trained. We don't get exposed to the set of microbes or insults that you know we need in order for the immune system to mature properly. That is sort of one part. On top of that, our diet has changed dramatically over the last 50 years, and we have stopped consuming many sort of food components that are really good food for our microbes. So, for example, if you eat a sort of spoon of sugar, there's nothing on that for your gut bacteria. But if you eat some lettuce, sort of a lot of the sort of plant sort of the material present in veggies cannot be metabolized with our human by humans and gets to our microbes and serves as food for our microbes. So you can imagine how we change our diets that we're basically starving our microbes and getting out of work.
Well, we'll continue with that, and just a few minutes we'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us. And then we'll be back to finish that answer and to answer your questions as well. So you stay with us. Nice to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at microbes today and some of the latest in microbiome research that's going on at UW-Madison. And, of course, that means we're talking about the bacteria, primarily the ones in your gut, which could be the key to unlocking some of human biology's biggest mysteries. My guests, Federico Rey, assistant professor of bacteriology at UW-Madison, and also with us today, Katrina Forrest, who's a professor in that same department. Nice to have them along. Certainly, if you have questions, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. And before we broke for the news, Madeline had called in, had a question relating to candida and wondering what happens in the gut to really create that kind of situation. And maybe, Katrina, you could talk about that first.
Yeah, so I just wanted to say candida is a fungus as opposed to a bacterium. It's a normal member of most gut microbiomes. And exactly as Federico was saying before the break, in immunocompromised people who are immunocompromised either because of some disease state or potentially because of immunosuppressive drugs, the diversity of the gut microbes is significantly decreased, and there's a real opportunity for some microbes to take over, and Candida is one of those that really thrives in that environment.
Well, let's take another call. George in Brookfield, I think, is next, and then Owen. George, you're first.
Yes, I've heard the microbe in the gut being referred to as the second brain. And I just wondered what that means, you know, what kind of bodily functions, obviously digestion and so forth, but what other kind of bodily functions does that include? Sure. And then what is preferred for the microbe? I mean, you touched on this in your last answer about diet. Is there a difference between introducing meat and dairy or a vegetarian diet? And I'll take your comments off the air.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Federico, Katrina, you want to start?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, the idea of a gut feeling has been around for a very long time.
Right.
And the idea of the second brain and the stomach goes back, I don't know, through history for a long time. And there's probably actually something to the idea that the microbes in your gut are also metabolizing themselves. So they're creating small molecules that can circulate in your bloodstream. And there's no reason, in fact, it's very clear that they do have some impact on your mental responses and your urges and, you know, what sort of feelings you might have. There's no question about it.
Yeah,
they actually can synthesize neurotransmitter. So they can synthesize sort of compounds that can cross our blood-brain barrier and talk to our brain. Also in the gut, we have, you know, a large number of neurons that sense all these metabolites that the microbes are making, and they're talking as well with pretty much every organ in our body, including our brains.
And just to pick up on that a little bit more, there are, you know, neural pathways that don't have to go back to the brain first. So the idea that there are neurons in the stomach that might be being talked to by the microbes is also part of this gut brain in your gut.
It's lots of interesting conversations apparently going on in there.
Yes. and then sort of the second part of the question was sort of what, you know, what type of food.
Yeah.
And I think sort of dairy is, of course, and meat is sort of, being from Argentina, I love eating meat, and I think so
I heard
fine.
You were a 2 T-bone a day guy.
Yes, I was. But I think sort of introducing sort of vegetables in your diet is really important. Sort of that's the food that your microbes eat. That is sort of what, you know, we cannot process again with our human sort of machinery, with our we need help from our microbes, and you know, by providing sort of then the food, we make them happy, they grow and they produce metabolites that help our health.
Yeah,
I guess even just beyond vegetables in particular, a lot of difficult to digest fibrous vegetable, you know, the parts of vegetables that we can't digest are the fibers. So beans in particular, and inulin containing foods that you hear about, those are the ones.
Let's go to Owen in Wauwega. Owen, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call there. Yeah, I had a question not about human gut activity, but cow rumination. Work on a conventional dairy, but I've also worked on organic dairies, and it just seems like the cows on the organic dairies seem a lot healthier and they live a lot longer. And I question, like, we use fungicides on our corn crops in conventional. We use sprays on the alfalfa, especially right before harvesting an alfalfa crop, to keep the leaf hoppers down and things like that. And I know that Roundup really changes the microbial activity of the soils. And I'm curious to know what these other type of sprays that we're using, what it's actually doing to affect the cow's overall health, because her rumen is potentially adversely affect with its microbiome activity.
Yeah, interesting area. Katrina,
it's a really good point about the Roundup in particular, because part of the reason Roundup was approved and thought to be so safe is because it actually doesn't, as far as we know, impact the activity of any human enzymes. But exactly as you just said, the problem is that it does very dramatically affect the microbial metabolism, and that's where the problem comes in.
Yeah.
We're only starting to understand how all these chemicals that, you know, we use, or humans use for, you know, just in our diets and or, you know, that we use for agriculture and sort of are impacting gut microbes and or rumen microbes. And sort of what we're seeing is sort of they have profound effects that sort of people did not anticipate. So I will not be surprised whether we are changing the microbiomes of the rumen by just using all these sort of herbicides.
No,
go ahead.
I was just going to say that part of the reason why animals have been given so many antibiotics themselves is because it does initially actually increase the yield of milk, or I think even just body weight put on, but that's a very first approximation outcome.
Well, let's take another call. Judith in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Judith.
Hi. I was wondering about how easily the microbes on the outside of our bodies are shared. I was thinking about how my very young grandchildren love to cuddle. There's a lot of skin-to-skin contact. Are we sharing our microbes? Is there some change that can come about by a consistent kind of sharing with another person?
Federico,
absolutely. So we not only your skin microbes, but also you can go as far as sort of sharing gut microbes as well. We have done an interesting study with folks from the Wisconsin Longitudinal Study, sort of that it's been going on in here at the University of Wisconsin for many years, where we have subjects that are either siblings, so that share early life environments, and we have subjects that are married and sort of couples that, you know, share the same environment. And we see that that couples share more microbes among them than siblings do. And among couples, we see that couples that, based on a series of questions, seem to be more closer to each other, share the partners, share more microbes than couples in which the partners are not so close to each other. So we definitely share our microbes with those around us, and cuddling, I think, is a great way to sort of share those microbes.
It's also very important early in life for establishing the skin microbiome of babies to make sure that they end up with a healthy skin microbiome, the skin-to-skin contact.
Yeah. And I was thinking about my one sister and two brothers. We didn't hug each other. So compared to my parents who hugged us and then hugged each other. So I could definitely see that's probably the case in most families. You don't run around hugging your brother too much.
That's probably true.
You share more with your parents than with your siblings.
Yeah, for sure about that. Thank you for calling. Appreciate. And just to go back, just to extend that a little bit, it goes back to something you were talking about earlier. Just the keeping the sterile kind of environment that we like to keep, and making sure the kids' hands are always clean and not ever getting dirty. That has some can have negative impacts.
Yeah,
you are right. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have definitely changed. So you see the trajectory with the number of infectious diseases. We have got really good at controlling those. But, you know, by controlling the number of infectious diseases that, you know, we face, we had traded that by an increased number of chronic diseases sort of that are increasing, that, you know, the chronic diseases have been increasing for the last 20, 30 years, like obesity, different types of allergies, asthma, sort of diabetes, cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's disease. So all these diseases have inflammatory components and are related with the immune system, and our immune system is related to our microbes. So you can see by, you know, how by sort of disrupting the equilibrium between our bodies and our microbes, we can predispose ourselves to all these type of chronic diseases. Yeah,
and there's also lots of good evidence that kids who grow up on farms, outside with animals, living closely with their sort of agricultural partners, are less likely to have such inflammatory diseases.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, by the way, you can join in too if you have a question or comment. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Jerry in Chippewa Falls, we'll give you a chance now. Jerry, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You said over-the-counter probiotics don't stay with you. So is there anything that I can take or do that would help, or other than fecal transplant?
Well, I would say the fact that they don't stay with you is not necessarily a bad thing. Those organisms are not meant to be a part of the long-term component of your microbiome, but they're still doing you good while they're there. And I would personally suggest don't worry so much about the over-the-counter packaged probiotics and take advantage of fermented foods and yogurt and kombucha and fermented sauerkraut and so on, which have a lot of the same microbes if you have nice healthy cultures.
Yeah, so yeah. Those are good for you. So somebody else had asked that same question. Thank you very much for calling, Jerry. You know, we'll take some more calls. There's one thing I did want to bring up today. That has to do with the Wisconsin Science Museum. It is the coolest place to visit. And can you talk a little bit about what's going on there at the Science Museum? Some of it relates, I think, to what we're talking about today.
I can talk just a little bit about it. I'm not on the inside, but Professors Dave Nelson and Anna Scope might be good people to talk to. They're leading the charge. What I understand is that they're seeking a new building right now, actually, and trying to raise funds for a permanent home for the museum.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have a very active board, and I'm sure they would love to hear from people who would like to be involved. Mm. I think they're in a bit of transition right now.
Yeah,
actually.
What do people find there when they go to visit?
They have rotating exhibits. They also have, Anna's very big on art and science, so they have some really nice public outreach art and science activities. I think associated with the museum, they've also been working on fundraising activities, like we had Paint Your Microbe Night, for example. That was a fun fundraising activity not too long ago. So the truth is I have not been to the recent exhibits at the Wisconsin Science Museum, so I can't specifically answer that.
But it's kind of cool if you just go online and type in Wisconsin Science Museum, you're going to get a whole host of things that are going on there for sure.
One of the things I do know that Dave Nelson has been very interested in, Professor Nelson from the Biochemistry Department, for a long time, is collecting scientific apparatus as they've been discarded from labs on campus. So he's built up quite a collection of very interesting old microscopes and other apparatuses that are used in have been used in labs around the country.
Very interesting. Well, I tell you what, we've got many callers still who want to visit with you. Before we go to Tracy, though, let's tell us about the research that you yourself, I mean, what's the active thing that you're involved in, so to speak, there?
Yes, yeah, so I can tell you a little bit about what my lab does. So something that is really interested in about the gut microbiome is that we all have a collection of about a unique collection of about 100 to 200 different types of bacteria. And that collection is sort of is different for each of us. And so one of the consequences of having, sort of that different collection of microbes is sort of that we interact, we experience food in different ways. So let's say you and I may be eating the same salad, but we might not be getting the same sort of compounds or the same sort of, we can, generate it from the salad by the gut microbes. Because of our differences in who we have in our gut, the salad is broken down in different ways and different compounds are made. And that's sort of the relation, of the microbes with the food sort of affects our health in a different way.
So that's pretty. So I might be getting, or you might be getting more out of your salad than I'm getting out of mine. Is that pretty much?
Exactly. Sort of like, for example, a lot of sort of fact is sort of red wine is supposed to have all these antioxidant molecules, and that they're sort of supposed to be good for us. But it turned out that as we consume the red wine that we consume, as sort of the antioxidants are not absorbed by us as they are present in the wine. they're heavily metabolized or broken down by our gut microbes, and the products generated by bacterial fermentation of those antioxidants are actually will have a beneficial effect on us.
Okay.
And not everybody has the same or the right type of microbes to generate the really good compounds. So basically, sort of what sort of the general idea of my lab is sort of that the nutritional value of the food that we consume can be changed, can be modulated by the gut microbiota, by the microbes in our gut.
Wow. So that glass of Cabernet Sauvignon that I had last night?
You should still have it. It's good for many things, even if you don't have the right microbes.
Yeah, but feed your microbes and you'll do an even better job of taking advantage of your red wine.
Okay, there we go. Tracy in Whitehall, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I would like to know about H. pylori, how it is acquired and its relationship to stomach cancers and chronic illness.
Yeah. So I am not an expert in H. pylori, but I can comment on something sort of the vast majority of the world population, something like 80% of the world population, is colonized with H. pylori. And only, so how it's transmitted is probably sort of very similar to other microbes, sort of through the environment, interactions with other individuals that are colonized with H. pylori. So that's sort of, but only on in very small subset of or very small number of individuals, H. pylori turns to be pathogenic. In fact, there are even studies showing that H. pylori can be beneficial and can have protective effects against chronic inflammatory diseases like
diabetes
and obesity.
Yeah, interesting.
So it's not always a bad player. Under the wrong circumstances can become the wrong player, and people are starting to understand what those circumstances are. But for the most part, it can be good or innocuous. Hmm.
Thank you, Tracy, for calling. Jenny in Wauwatosa, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I was calling because I've been doing some research about in France they do antibiograms where they analyze maybe an antibody, and they compare it to how an essential oil can perform and how essential oils can support our microbiomes and our gut health. And I was curious if you guys had any insight or new knowledge about that.
Sorry, could you please define essential oils? I'm not sure that I know what an essential oil is.
So the essential oil is like the most basic part of the plant. It's like when they concentrate it, if they can be steam distilled or cold pressed to get the core of the plant.
Yeah.
And so the idea is to use that as antibiotics? Is that?
Well, that to like help support gut health as well as they will take some kind of microbe and compare it to see how essential oils will react against it. And I've heard a lot about it really supporting gut health recently.
Well, plants made a lot of sort of compounds that microbes have evolved to metabolize. And so as we, you know, as sort of by consuming fruits and vegetables, we feed our gut microbes. I imagine that these essential oils may have a lot of sort of beneficial compounds that promote the growth of organisms in the gut. But I do not know which is especially particularly what those are.
Katrina?
The only thing I was going to add is that I think sometimes the reason the beneficial oils seem to have a bigger impact is just because you've concentrated whatever the interesting plant compounds or polyphenols were in the plant in the first place, so the dose is just higher. And so I think that's a big part of why you may hear about essential oils.
Hmm.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have time for Daniel and Holman. Maybe a quick question from him. Hi, Daniel.
Hi. Dan from Holman, Wisconsin over here.
Yeah.
I've got a question as far as, actually I had two questions, but I'm just going to go with the one for right now because they could pull, they could carry on. But on the compounds our bodies. You know, each and every one of us are different bodies, and he said that there's that the compounds are really good in the bodies, you know, that have them, but some bodies don't have all these good compounds that can help help these antioxidants or the help the bloodstream and all this stuff for the microbes to do what they need to do in the body for us to be healthy, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So what's your question?
Well, you know what? I just misread the clock, and we're about out of time here. So it's something that we're going to have to take up on the next show, the next time you're with us. Boy, the time flew by. Thank you so much.
Daniel, email us, and we'll try to answer you.
Send us an email at our Ideas Network Facebook page, and we'll make sure you our two guests, Federico Ray and Katrina Forrest from the Department of Bacteriology at the UW-Madison, our guests. Sorry we didn't get to that, but that always happens. Stay with us. Lots in store.